Nathan Fraser Show, episode number 101, The Darker Side of Marketing. All right, here we go.
Mixing business with politics. This is The Nathan Fraser Show.
What is up, Free Market Squad, in the place to be? It's your boy, Nathan Fraser, High Priest of Propaganda. Thank you for taking a half hour, actually a little bit longer this week, out of your week to hang with me. And it's been a minute since I released a podcast episode, so I'm going to release this supplementary episode. I've been busy as fuck launching two new podcasts for clients and getting a new course put together for Podcast Blast Off and getting a new product for Copy and Funnels put together. So I have been super busy. Free Market Squad is about to launch, and yeah, I've had my hands full, so we'll just say that. Anyways, here's the deal. This is a supplementary episode. It's from an episode of Kevin Koskela's podcast called Freedom Lovin'. We get into marketing. We get into some of the darker aspects of marketing, some of the more psychological aspects of marketing. This one might make you uncomfortable. That's okay, though, because that's what I do on this podcast. Also, at the end of the podcast, I'm going to tell you how you can get access to a free course on how to use stories in your sales message. This is a course that me and Landon put together. Stories are great for sales for a couple of reasons why. I'll get more into that on the end of the podcast. I'll also tell you about the course that we put together and how you can get access to the course for free. So stay tuned for that. Before that, though, check out this recent interview I did on Kevin Koskela's Freedom Lovin' podcast over at freedomlovin.com. If you want to check out more, if you enjoy this interview, you want to check out more of Kevin's work, freedomlovin.com is the website for Kevin. And yeah, without any further rambling, here we go.
All right. I am super excited and honored to have Nathan Fraser on the show today. Nathan helps people automate their marketing so they get more sales with less effort. And he is also the founder of podcastblastoff.com and host of the Nathan Fraser Show. Nathan, welcome to Freedom Lovin'.
Hey, Kevin. Thank you for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't believe I was reviewing some of your podcasts, and I can't believe I have not been a subscriber all this time, going back to like 2015, I think you started it?
Yeah, I've been doing it a while. I kind of switched up my format about halfway through, but I've been doing a podcast for a couple of different networks, including LRN.fm for, about 3-4 years now.
Yeah, it's kind of right up my alley, because it's like you cover a lot of practical topics backed with some philosophical genius, basically.
Well, I'm going to humbly accept that.
Yeah, before we get started, I wanted to read the quote that I heard you say on some of your shows, and maybe it's how you end every show, but I really liked it. You said, "Have faith in each other, not in authority." So I'm guessing that you're not a big fan of authority.
No, I've always been very anti-authoritarian. I didn't do very well in school. I don't do very well in the corporate world. And it's a big part of why I kind of lean towards libertarian / anarchist philosophy. And it's a huge part of why I'm an entrepreneur rather than trying to do the 9-to-5 corporate grind.
Yeah, that's anyone that's kind of an independent-minded or freedom-minded person is going to have a really tough time going into that corporate world, because it's just, trying to fit yourself into some hole that it's so mind-numbing to go in there and try to make your life like between these 8 to 10 hours a day in this office, and you've got a boss, and you've got like you have to sit in a cubicle, and it's just really, I did it for years and just absolutely hated it.
So basically, here's one of the things that I've kind of realized as branching out into the entrepreneurial world. I do a lot of marketing and copywriting, and I help businesses with getting their sales messages in line. And I work with a lot of business owners, and the overlap between entrepreneurial minded people and anti-authoritarian people, there's like a large overlap in that Venn diagram. So kind of leaving the corporate type jobs, the 9-to-5 type jobs, and moving into working with a lot of business owners, I wouldn't say that it's philosophically libertarian, but there is a lot of that. But definitely the anti-authoritarian, the anti-big government, anti-being taxed to death. There's a lot of that in the freelance and in the entrepreneurial world.
Yeah, just the idea of wanting to pave your own way versus kind of going along with society, right? And I think that's what attracts us to this kind of a world where there are other people that are doing this and they're not just following orders and following rules. They're just, you know, kind of making things happen on their own. Now, I wanted to go back and talk about how you got interested originally in entrepreneurship. And, you know, I know your story is that you grew up in some poverty and were able to get out of that and still have this desire to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So, and I say this half tongue in cheek, but when I was like 14, 15 years old, I started selling drugs. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I made a lot more money doing that than flipping hamburgers at Sonic Drive-In. And so the idea of being my own boss was definitely planted in my mind very early. From that, though, I mean, that's a product that pretty much sells itself. From there, I started up a record label with my little brother and subsequently lost a lot of the money that we gained selling drugs. Is that okay to even say on the podcast?
Yeah, I don't think there are like any police or authorities listening to this that are going to come and arrest you. So I think you're good.
Okay. So made a lot of money with my first business, quote unquote, lost a lot of money with my second one, then started up a t-shirt business and lost a lot of money on that, then started up a software as a service business and had a seed investor that pulled out after we put in about 2 years worth of work. And so lost 2 years worth of invested time and money on that. And then when I went back to my team that had helped me with the original software as a service, I had another idea for Podcast Blastoff. I wanted to start another software as a service, and getting the guys back on board was definitely difficult because we had started a company called My Graffiti Cake. We had one huge backer and they wanted exclusive rights. And when negotiations fell through, they pulled all of their backing. They pulled all of their financial support. And we were left with a really good product that we had no idea how to market. And so in order to get the team on board for another software as a service, I had to double down on learning marketing, learning copywriting. And if I hadn't done that, I don't think I would have been able to talk them into investing time into another one of my crazy ideas. But fortunately, I did. Fortunately, they did. And Podcast Blastoff has been going strong for about a year and a half now. And because of that, people have started coming to me to ask me to write copy for their sales pages, write emails for them, and help them with their marketing. And that's actually where the majority of my income comes from now.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just briefly, can you explain what Podcast Blastoff is all about?
So I have a small team of software and software designers and web programmers and graphic designers. And we kept getting podcast websites. That was one of the biggest jobs that we kept getting, just kind of doing freelance web design work. And so after 3 or 4 designs for podcast websites, we said, well, you know, we just keep doing the same work over and over again. What if we created a service that, you know, we take these designs that we've been doing and we turn them into something that anybody can access? And we basically streamlined the podcast hosting service. Basically, before Podcast Blastoff, you had to go get podcast hosting from like Libsyn or Blueberry. You had to go get hosting for your website from maybe Bluehost or HostGator. You had to get you had to get WordPress and install it on your server. And you had to go get a template. You had to have a web designer come in and design the whole thing for you. And a lot of podcasters were just frustrated with that. So we basically took all of that and put it into one package where for one monthly fee, you get hosting for your podcast files. You get access to a bunch of different podcasting website templates. You get hosting for your website, and you don't have to know all of the technical stuff that holds a lot of podcasters back. So it was basically, it was something that people kept coming to us for. It was a need that we kept having to fill over and over again. And we said, you know, instead of starting from zero every single time, let's just create a software as a service where People can come in and get everything in one place and not have to be a web designer, not have to be a technical genius and still be able to get their podcast out there.
Yeah, that is so cool because I've set up a couple of podcasts and I'll tell you, it's a pain in the ass. It's not even now. Like I did my first one, I think it was like 2010 or 2009. I can't remember, but I remember so many steps. It was like this whole, there was a whole instruction sheet. It was like just step one, step two, step three. And it was just like, keep going. And then of course things don't work right. And you're just like stuck and it's incredibly annoying. But yeah, that sounds like an awesome service. I would totally take advantage if I wasn't set up yet.
Yeah. I mean, basically what we wanted to make it was something where you have your podcast ready to go, you set up your account, and 15 or 20 minutes later, you have a website, you have your stuff ready to submit to iTunes, and you don't have to have five different accounts with five different services. You just have it all in one place. It's not for everybody. If you're like a high-level business person that wants to have all of the latest plugins on your website, we're definitely not for you. But if you're the average podcaster out there that just wants to get your podcast out there, I confidently say that we're one of the best options out there for people right now.
Yeah, if they want all the fancy stuff, just hit us up at Work Hero and we can help you out with all that. So nice. Just a little plug for Work Hero there. So, all right, cool. Well, so then you said the main part of your business is copywriting. So when you say copywriting, can you talk about what exactly that is? Because some people might not actually know what that is. And then what types of copywriting do you do?
Yeah, so copywriting is basically salesmanship in print. What I do for people is I write sales pages, I write sales letters, I write sales emails. We can probably get really deep into it, but it's basically, I guess the easiest way to break down what it is writing that grabs the reader's attention, writing that speaks directly to the reader's needs, speaks directly to the reader's wants, speaks directly to the reader's fears, and helps position whatever it is that you're selling as the most logical, and I say logical even though it's a majority of it's based off of emotional persuasion, but it's basically, here's what you're dealing with, here's how bad it can get, here's how good it can get if you solve the problem, here's the best way to solve the problem, and here's how to get that solution. And it's a lot more intricate than that, but that's what it is. It's presenting a sales message on a page in print rather than having a salesperson that has to go out there and do your selling for you.
Yeah, it's how I got started with internet business is when I found out about copywriting and how I can just put up a page and then have people buy from the page. I don't even have to talk to them or see them. I was like, I'm in. Sign me up. That's perfect. I don't want to talk to people. So,
yeah, and the best thing about it is you put the page up. I mean, sometimes we tweak pages, we do split tests, we see which headline works better and which offer works better. But when you have a good sales page, it's like having a salesperson that's out there making sales for you 24 hours a day, working on weekends, working in the middle of the night, never calling in sick, and just bringing in sales as frequently as you can send them traffic. So yeah. And with the advent of the internet and with the ability to test things in real time, there's never been a better time to be a skilled copywriter than right now.
Oh, I totally agree. Now, how did you learn it and how did you get started?
I learned, gosh, I think for a while I was struggling. I couldn't figure out. Marketing was like this big world of mystery to me. And so I started kind of getting into running ads and I kept hearing words like ad creative and copywriting, and I started trying to like figure out what it was a mystery to me. Like I said, up until this time, my business sense was if you have a good product, it's going to sell. Mm-hmm. So this came from back in the day, you know, when I was a teenager, if we had the best weed available, it was going to sell. If we had the best ecstasy available, it was going to sell.
Right.
We didn't have to put much money into marketing. And then after three business failures, I said, okay, well, maybe it's not just the best product, because the software as a service, the My Graffiti Cake software, it was amazing. All the bakeries that we had it in, it was the number one seller, but I didn't have any idea on how to market it. And we went out of business. We ran out of money on that. And it was a vastly superior product to anything out there. And I was like, well, how come this didn't work? And so I started looking into marketing. And like I said, it was all a mystery to me. I started coming across books. The first book that I heard about copywriting was a book called Ready, Fire, Aim by Michael Masterson. And he talks heavily about how marketing and copywriting are what the backbone of sales is. And if you don't get those right, your business has no chance. It started making a lot of sense. So I went down this rabbit hole of trying to figure out what copywriting was and how to write effective sales copy. And so I just started buying books. I started buying online courses, buying audio seminars. And I think 2013, 2014, I started picking up the odd job of writing copy for other businesses. And I started getting word of mouth. I had a couple of jobs that I hit right out the... I ran an advertisement campaign for a fundraiser and immediately saw, like, within the first day of running the advertisement that I ran for him, they saw like a 63% increase in fundraising.
Wow.
And so they started telling me about other people. And I've had a couple of bombs. I think every copywriter does, but I keep, every time I get money from writing a sales letter, I invest in a new course. And
wow,
now I can confidently say that I'm in the top, like, within my peers, I'm one of the better copywriters. I won't say I'm an A-list copywriter, but I'm definitely a high B-list copywriter.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. I think this is the area that took my business off, my TriSwim Coach, the swimming site. I had a nice little part-time business there, so with some side income. But then once I actually went out and hired a copywriter that put together a sales letter, that's where things really took off. And I remember paying this guy. He was kind of new, like he had been doing it for maybe a couple of years, but he wasn't like in that top tier. So I got him and he did this whole like awesome sales letter for $3,000. And I remember hesitating at that. I was like, oh, $3,000. This is like, I wasn't making much money then. So I was like, it was so hard to pull that trigger, but then I did it. And I mean, it must have paid off within a month. It was like, I easily paid off $3,000. Now that guy, he's gone on to be like kind of a bigger copywriter and he charges, I think probably four times that amount, maybe even more. So, but that is like, I think you're right. That's the cornerstone of your business. And if you don't have it right, then it's, it makes it a little tougher.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is a lot of business owners think that they can save money by writing their own sales copy, or they think they can save money by just copying and pasting or just writing what they think is going to be compelling. But copywriting is definitely an art form. It's an emotional roller coaster. You have to know how to grab the reader. You have to know how to pull them in. It's more than just saying, here's why this is the best solution. It's about taking your reader on a journey and making it as smooth as possible, and then not having any of the red flags raised, putting all of their concerns at ease, and then being able to confidently pitch your offer at the end of the sales letter, which even, you know, high-priced copywriters still kind of get squeamish at the end of the sales letter. There's so many ways to mess it up. And if your sales copy isn't like a well-greased slide that grabs the reader, pulls them in, and takes them on this journey, every single time that you phrase a word wrong, or every single time that you have something that causes a red flag to go off, or every single time that you allow your reader to slip out of the story, that decreases the chances that they'll make it to the end sales message. And so it's one of those things where, yeah, a copywriter might be expensive, but the amount of money that you're going to get off of a good, well-written sales letter versus off of one that you, the business owner with no knowledge of copywriting, you're really throwing money away if you don't invest in some good sales copy.
Right. Did you ever take that course? It's called Copy Hour.
Nope. That's not even something I've heard of.
Okay. Yeah. I did this a while back because I didn't really want to become a copywriter as my part of my business, but I wanted to learn more about it. And it's basically the course is, at least part of the beginning part, you hand write out a sales letter every day and you just copy it from, they give you the sales letter. And it's usually like one of these old school, like Dan Kennedy, or who's the other guy? There's another famous guy that I'm forgetting his name, but you just basically copy exactly word for word the whole entire letter. And you do it every day and it's like for several weeks. And then the idea is that you get, like you were saying, like you sort of get the feel of it instead of just kind of learning like the technical part of it. There's a feel for it. And yeah, so I think that's totally correct that you can't just kind of rely on, oh, I know my product and I know what people need. It's like, you have to tell that story in the right way. And I've had some issues with like where I change something like I find it to be super minor. Like I'm going to take out this box that I had in, you know, this section, and then all of a sudden the sales plummet. And it's like, what? Like, how did that even matter? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's so hard to figure out those things that are going to make a, like these little tiny things that are going to make a huge difference.
Yeah. And the thing about it is a lot of, there's courses that teach you like copywriting templates, but realistically it is an art form. It's like when I first started copywriting, I went back, I read almost everything I could find from Dan Kennedy. I read everything I could find from Eugene Schwartz, from Bruce Barton. Like I went back to 1900s copywriters all the way up until current year copywriters and just did a deep dive of studying all of their writing, all of their reasoning. And the thing about it is I think that what I'm going to divert real quick. Before I got into copywriting, I was a conspiracy theorist. So before I even got into business, I was very much into social engineering. I was very much into how the media programs people. I was very much into propaganda. Edward Bernays' Propaganda was one of the very first books that I ever read on mass marketing and mass psychology and social engineering. And so I already had a deep fascination and probably above average understanding of what makes people tick, because there's a lot of programming that's in our genes. There's a lot of programming that goes all the way back to our primordial selves. And if you know how to take advantage of those things, it's really easy to manipulate people. So I kind of had a base understanding of psychology of what some people would call manipulation, what can also be persuasion if used for the best interest of the reader. And then also having a background in music, me and my little brother, like I said, my very first business was a record label. We used to do rap music, and that was predominantly all storytelling. In order to have a good song that resonates with people, it has to be relatable. It has to take them on a journey. It has to tell them a story. And so I kind of had two benefits going for me that most copywriters don't. Number one, I was a huge freak about psychology and understanding what makes people tick and what makes people so easy to manipulate. And then number two was I'm a huge fan of storytelling. I love stories. I love fiction books. I love comic books. I love music. And so those two things kind of came together when I started looking into copywriting. So I didn't approach copywriting from you have to have a headline, then you have to have a hook, then you have to have an offer. I came into it from, what is it that makes people act? What is it that grabs people's attention and pulls them in and takes them out of the active thinking mode and puts them into the passive thinking mode, where they hand the steering wheel off to you and let you make the decisions for them? So that's really what separates a good copywriter from a great copywriter, is that just love of knowledge of how the human brain works and how you can get people into that mode where they're letting you do their thinking for them. And the conspiracy theorist in me says, oh, that's evil. But the capitalist in me says, as long as you're doing it for the benefit of both parties involved, I feel like if you have a good product or if you have a good service, you have an obligation to do everything you can to make sure you're selling it to the people that it's actually right for.
Right, right. And yeah, it's like if everybody were 100% purely logical about all their decisions that they make, their purchasing decisions, then we wouldn't need copywriting, right? It would just be like, here's the product and here's all the things you're going to get and buy here. But the fact is that people make their decisions based on emotions, not on logic, right?
Yeah. And you'll see that. I mean, you look at a product, you look at the packaging on the front. If it's a toy, on the front, it shows kids having fun. On the back, it gives you a couple of logical reasons why this is the best toy for you. If you go to the sports and fitness section of the store and you look at the products on the front, it's the person getting that tone fit body. On the back, it's all the logical reasons. So people make their decisions based off of the emotions, and then they go and they back up those decisions with logic. And if you make a really compelling emotional argument, people don't even really need that much logic. They just need a little bit of logic so that they can tell themselves, yeah, I made a logical decision, even though that's not the case at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally true. So you mentioned that you were really into psychology. I'm just curious, because I'm also really into psychology. And I think that's why I think marketing is really interesting, because it's all based on psychology. And that's what copywriting is about. So what are some of the books that you've gotten a lot out of psychology-wise?
And this might be the easy answer. I would say Cialdini's book, Influence is probably one of the best books on psychology when it comes specifically to selling and marketing. To Sell as Human by, I think, Daniel Pink is the author of that.
Yeah.
That's a really good one as well. Really, though, anything from like Edward Bernays, again, it kind of walks the line of whether this is ethical or not. But just all of that stuff. I always was interested in like Pavlov's experiments. I was always interested in Operation Mockingbird and all of that type of stuff. So a really wide variety as far as where my knowledge comes from of this stuff, and most of it on the maybe seedier side of how the human brain works.
Yeah, you mentioned that book, Propaganda. That you're the second person that's recommended that book. And isn't did that tie into the Nazis? Like, did they use that, or was that the wrong thing? Thinking of something else.
I don't think that they used that, because Edward Bernays wrote that before the rise of the Nazi empire. As far as I can remember, I think that book came out in the 20s.
Okay.
And the Nazis didn't rise to power until like the mid 30s. Edward Bernays was related to, I want to say either Darwin or one of those thinkers back in the day. And he had a lot of controversy surrounding him. He pushed for a lot of ideas that were a little bit, I mean, eugenics was popular back then.
Sure.
Cigarettes weren't known to be as unhealthy as they are now. So he has a lot of campaigns for tobacco companies that probably ended up doing a lot of people damage. He was also one of the very first people to bring marketing into the political realm. So he was one of the first people to start running marketing campaigns for politicians and marketing campaigns for social agendas. He was known as one of the guys that actually sold America on a couple of wars, because he kind of manipulated and selectively allowed certain information about certain territories to come into the media and sold pretty much the whole population on going to certain wars back in the day. So looking back, there's a lot of warnings about how this type of knowledge can be used for the ill of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he specifically intended to do that, but it seems like towards the end of his life, he definitely had a lot of, I don't want to say regrets, but he definitely changed his tune a little bit about things and said that maybe people should be more careful about the power that advertising has in the wrong hands.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. You look at how we are manipulated all the time. And then when it comes to something like politics, which I know you discuss on your show, it gets scary when it's like you see people just falling left and right over these tactics, and they're just like things that don't make any logical sense. They're just completely believing in. And it's like, wow, how did that even happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, and this is really, a lot of this is absolutely marketing. As humans, we tend to look for what the herd is doing. We tend to look for what the leaders are doing. We tend to, riddled with self-doubt, we're riddled with insecurity, we don't trust ourselves, so we look for indicators as to what the right decision is. And if you control the media, you can paint a picture of what the right decision is. You can put up a poll and say, this is what 80% of Americans are doing.
Right.
You can position a camera to look at the president from underneath, you know, position the camera to be viewing the president from like a worm's eye view, and oh, look, the president is a great leader and he's above all of you and he's a respected authority. When you want to cast somebody in a negative light, you can position the camera in a different way. All these little things. What do you have in the background? What do you have? What kind of scenery is behind the person that you're interviewing? What's going on the little ticker that people are subconsciously picking up without even realizing it? All of these little things are cues that our subconscious, like our subconscious brain, is incredible. It's absorbing everything that's going on. It's constantly processing things. It's running our entire body. It's running our muscular system. It's running our cardiovascular system. It's running our lungs. It's making all these millions of decisions for us that we're not even aware of. And if you can tap into that, if you know how to tap into that, if you know what causes people to do what they do, it's very easy to manipulate people like lemmings and direct them towards a cliff and have them run off a cliff. And only 1 out of 1,000 will ever stop and question, hey, why are we running this way? And it's people like me and you that usually do that. And sadly, often we get trampled historically, but we do live in a time now where we're able to stand up and kind of have a platform of our own and maybe stop some of the lemmings from running off the edge of the cliff.
Yeah, I think I love the way you put that. I was thinking of this. I went to this seminar. It was like a weekend kind of seminar a while back. It's probably like 10 years ago. And I'm not going to say the name of the guy because he's kind of a famous author, and I don't want to ruin it for anyone that might go, because I got a lot out of the seminar. It was about money. It was about, you know, how to, it was about basically the wealth mindset kind of thing. But one of the things we did, it was just right along the lines of what you're saying, was in the middle, like it was at the end of the first day, they're like, okay, we're going to, we have this exercise we're going to have you guys do, and here's how it's going to go. And it was taking a $100 bill. So we were told to bring a $100 bill to the seminar. That was one of the things beforehand. So everybody had their $100. And so they're like, okay, get out your $100 bill and you're going to go through this line. We formed all the lines so that you walk through this line. And then as the guy's talking and explaining the instructions, they're setting up these like canisters, and they have these lighters. And we're like, what the hell? And then he's like, okay, so get in this line. And they're explaining how to do it, all the process of how we're going to get in line. And then we got the $100 bill in our hands. And then as you walk up, you're just going to burn that $100 bill under the flame. And I'm like, holy crap. And it was supposed to be like this lesson, like you're going to learn a lesson by burning this money. And everyone starts doing it. And I'm going, holy shit, like, I can't do this. There's no way. But everybody is lining up and they're like, okay. And my ex was with me and she's like, well, I think we should just do it. I mean, maybe we're going to learn something from this. And I'm like, nope, I'm sitting here. I'm not doing it. I'm going to hold out. And then right before the first person got up there, they're like, all right, stop. And that was all just a lesson to learn about this whole thing of going along with walking off the cliff. And, you know, 99% of the room, I'd say, was going to do it.
Yeah. So. One of the things that I learned very early, like I said, when I was like 14, 15, I made a lot of money. My little brother wanted to start a rap label, a music label. So we took a lot of that money. We invested it in studio time. We invested it in going on tour. We invested it in merchandise and stuff like that. I say invested, but we squandered it. It is more appropriate. But one of the things that I learned was when you're up on stage, we would get up on stage in front of 200 or 300 people, 400 or 500 people, and you grab the microphone and you tell people what to do, and they just do it. You tell people to put their hands up in the air. 99% of the audience is going to put their hands up in the air and you know, wave back and forth with you to the beat.
Right.
You tell people, one of the things I had to learn early was if you're in a bar, if you're in an area where there's an open space and you want the crowd to come up, you have to tell them, hey, we're about to start the show. Everybody come up to the front of the crowd. Everybody come up to the front of the stage. And you do that and people will do it. People are so open to suggestion, especially if they see somebody as an authority figure. So all of these things, you know, little subtle things that they've done experiments on how much pain one person will put onto another just because the person telling them to do it is wearing a lab coat.
Right.
There's so much. I think that was the Milgram experiment.
Right.
There's so much out there about how we as human beings, most of our decision making, we just leave it up to other people to do for us. And it's horrifying, but at the same time, it leads to a lot of sales.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know. I meet more and more people that it just doesn't work on. People like you, people that I work with in my day-to-day business routine. A lot of people, I would say the amount of people nowadays that it just doesn't work on as well as it used to is a larger proportion of the population than ever before. Yes, a lot of people still get swept up in March for Our Lives and yeah, whatever the newest trending thing is. But larger percentage of the population every day is looking for other alternatives to make their decisions, as opposed to maybe even 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's a great trend. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's sort of on the surface, it would seem like it's going the other direction where it's like everyone's taking a side and they're kind of locked into their whatever their group says is the thing. But yeah, and you look at the media and how much control they had over people for so long, and like the whole left-right thing, like you have to, there's two ways to look at this issue and there's no more. You can only pick, you have to pick one side or the other. And if you pick this side, then you must agree with all these other things that side agrees with. And it's like, that stuff is breaking down. It's just, it's harder to see, you know, just kind of in day-to-day life. But I was wondering, do you think there's any areas where you're susceptible to kind of propaganda or being manipulated?
Oh, yeah. Even being in it 24/7, I still have to stop and check myself and say, okay, is this really the most rational decision? Because everybody likes to think that they make logical decisions. Everybody likes to think that they're not easily emotionally manipulated. Even those of us who understand it full and well, I think that we're still susceptible to it. The thing about it is, though, especially like from a marketer's point of view, the audience is becoming more savvy. The audience is less gullible. It's not as easy to sell snake oil as it used to be. People look for reviews. People are much more skeptical about sales messages nowadays. That's why having a really good copywriter is more important now than it ever has been before. So overall, skepticism is definitely on the rise, and logic and being able to actually stop and think, it seems like more and more of the population is able to do it. But even I mean, I know almost all of these tricks, and I still have to stop and say, am I just agreeing with this because it confirms my bias, or is this really the most rational explanation for whatever's going on?
Right. So now with your copywriting, do you do mostly sales letters, or is it a mix of emails and sales letters and other like ads? Or
so I have a website called Copy and Funnels, and most of it is funnel-based copywriting. So it's sales pages. It's a lot of what I write now is content marketing for people, webinars, podcast episodes, emails. Emails is probably like the biggest thing that I do, but sales pages as well. So it's kind of like, I guess when I first started out, it was mainly for charities. That was what I was mainly doing. And then software as a service, because I was really familiar with software. But as I've grown, as I've kind of expanded my horizons as far as copy goes, I like approaching copy from a multi-tiered approach now. So I like to know what makes a good opt-in page, what makes a good lead magnet, what makes a good sales page, and making sure that from the opt-in page to the lead magnet to the email sequence that follows up to the sales page, having a consistent feel, a consistent message that goes across the whole board, rather than just, I'm just going to only write sales pages. I like to approach it from kind of like the 5,000 foot view and make sure that there's a consistent theme to all of it, because inconsistency is one of the biggest things that kind of throws up those red flags. If somebody clicks on an ad because it says one thing and then they get to the sales page and the tone is different, maybe the advertisement was, you need to see this now before time runs out. And then you click on the sales page and the sales page is, here's five ways to increase your whatever, whatever by the end of this week. That inconsistency will throw up a red flag. It'll cause a lot of distrust. So I kind of try to, when I take on clients now, I try to make sure that whatever I'm writing for them matches the tone of everything else. Or a lot of times they just hire me to take on everything. And I just, those are like big multi-thousand dollar projects. But I try to make sure that everything is consistently themed throughout.
Is there any topic or business or something that people want to promote that you wouldn't take on?
I actually turned down a lot of work. Typically, if I turn down a job, it's because I don't get a good feel from the person themselves. If I feel like somebody's like a pump and dump entrepreneur, like I'm just in this to make as much money as I can before the bottom falls out, I just refuse to work with people like that. If I feel like somebody's a really shady individual, I won't work with them. Something that you're probably going to be familiar with, having a background in like Austrian economics, I'm a big fan of free market transactions. I'm a big fan of if somebody buys this, you know, if I'm selling something for a dollar and you're buying it, it should be because the dollar is more valuable to me, but whatever I'm selling is more valuable to you than your dollar. So we should both walk away from that transaction feeling like we benefited, feeling like we left with more than we went in. So if somebody's trying to sell something to a market where I don't feel like it's the best thing for that market, or I don't feel like the solution is really a solution that's worth what they're charging for it, or that the entrepreneur or the business person doesn't have the best interest in mind for their person, or if it's something that, you know, like I haven't written anything for like junk food or anything like that, but I haven't been asked to do anything. So I can't say that's a moral thing, but there's been a few jobs, I'd probably say upwards of 20, 25 jobs that people came to me and I just didn't get a good feel from the person. I didn't get a good feel that they were actually trying to the best interest of their market wasn't at the forefront of their intentions. And so, yeah, I've turned down a lot of work, but it's not a product or service. It's mainly the intentions of the person selling that product or service.
Yeah, that makes sense. So do you think there would be a product or service that you're just like, I don't understand it, so I'm not going to do it? Or is it pretty much across the board, you can put it together where, you know, like if I came to you with my triathlon swimming website, would that be something that you would say, yeah, I can, I mean, the trigger points are the same with swimming as it is with diet, as it is with, you know, whatever else?
It's market research. So before I take on a job or before I actually even spend second writing copy, I like to go through and I really like to explore the market. I'm going to look at all the top books on the subject. I'm going to go to Amazon. I'm going to read the reviews of people, what they're saying about it. I'm going to go to YouTube. I'm going to look at all the content creators around the subject, look and see what they're talking about, look and see what the comment sections are about, see what people are talking about, see what pain points are coming up, see what frustrations are coming up, see what victories people talk about. And so stuff like that, like I said, as long as it's a market where, or as long as it's a product or service where you're actually helping people, you're actually bringing some sort of benefit to people's lives or helping them avoid some sort of pain point that they don't want to have blow up in their face. I wouldn't say that there's anything that I would not feel comfortable writing. Definitely back in the day when I first started, like I said, it was mainly charities that I was writing for, and it was mainly software as a service that I was writing for. So I was very uncomfortable outside of those two fields. But within the last couple of years, I've taken on people that rent houses. I've taken on people that do trainings, dog trainings, people that do personal coaching. So I've kind of gotten really comfortable with a lot of different niches now. I don't know if there's anything I wouldn't take on other than if it was something that I didn't feel was in the best interest of the buyer.
Cool. Yeah, we're going to have to talk after the show because I probably have some work for you.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really into the email marketing. That's kind of a lot of what I do. That's how I've been successful with TriSwim Coach. And I like the story aspect of it. And I use the Andre Chaperone method. I'm sure you've read him. It's like where you tell like the soap opera story, and then and then at the end you've got the link to buy, but it's they're not until the end, so you're not like selling them on every email. So I really like that approach of like getting them invested in the story, and then boom, here you go.
So I'm not going to take away from it at all. I'm a little bit more I don't want to say salesy, but I'm a big fan of there should be a sales message at the end of every email. But I've been doing email marketing for about 4 years now, and I try to write every day for my own. I have two lists, and I try to write every day for at least one of the two lists. But I also have clients that I write for pretty consistently, so I don't always get to my own lists. But doing the soap opera, it's good. It's definitely one of many different ways to email market. But I feel like doing it that method tends to burn me out. So I've come up with like 15 or 16 different ways to write emails. So every day when I wake up, I just say, okay, what am I going to write about today? And which formula am I going to use? And I have like 15 or 16 different formulas that I can pick from. So I never run out of content. But if I was going to make a suggestion to you, I would say start looking at ways to vary up your emails, because people will stop tuning into emails if it's the same thing over and over again. And the other thing to think about is some people are going to be ready to buy that first day. And if you're going to make them wait until the fifth day, you might lose them on the third email.
Yeah, that's a good point. We should get together and go over it and see if you got any ideas there, because I'm also big on the emailing my list pretty much every day or every at least 3 days a week, where they're getting a lot of emails from me. And I get the thing where it's either people love it. They go, oh my God, I read all of your emails. It's amazing. I love your stuff. Or they absolutely hate it and they just unsubscribe. And I actually don't really hear from them. They're just gone. So yeah, I think that's a good point. So they get the autoresponder series. That's the story. That's only 4 emails. And then after that, they start getting bombarded with my emails every day. And those emails always have an offer at the end.
Okay. So. Nice. So one thing that I will say about that is, if you're not getting unsubscribes, you're not doing it right. You should be getting unsubscribes. So if people are unsubscribing from you and other people are saying, hey, these are awesome, that's an indication that you're doing it right. The worst thing is to be lukewarm. You want to have people either be hot or you want them to be cold. And the cold ones can get off your email list, because all they're going to do is they're going to bring your open rates down, and they're going to bring your relevancy down. And you don't want to be paying for people that aren't interested in hearing, because I don't know which service you use, but pretty much all of the services you pay per person that you're sending to, you don't want to be paying to right. a list full of people who are just kind of lukewarm.
Yeah, I recently had to clean my list and just get rid of a whole bunch of people, because that was it was hurting my campaign. So I had to just delete about 4,000 people. But that's the way it goes. I mean, it's like you want them buy or die, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So cool. So if someone wants to get started with you, they want to have some copywriting done, how would they do that?
So my main website is copyandfunnels.com. And I have a lot of free stuff there. I put different copywriting templates. I'm about to launch a course on email marketing that's taken, you know, all of my years of experience and kind of wrapping it up into a 5-day training. That's available there as well. And then I'm going to give a shameless plug for a podcast that I do with one of my clients. We do a podcast called The Copywriters Podcast. And for people that are not at the point yet, because like I said, I charge a pretty penny for my writing, but a lot of business owners are not at the point where they can afford me, but they definitely need better copy. And the Copywriters Podcast is all about, either as a business owner, how to write better copy, as a copywriter, how to write better copy, or if you're a business owner and you want to just check to make sure that you're not throwing money away on somebody who's just swindling you, saying that they're a good copywriter, you want to be able to check their work. The Copywriters Podcast is great for that as well. So that's the two things that I would definitely send people to: copywriterspodcast.com and copyandfunnels.com.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds like a great way to get going. Now, do you work with people that are more starting out, or is it people that have had a business for a while and need to kind of redo things?
Yeah, I pretty much exclusively avoid brand new entrepreneurs. And here's one of the lessons that I had to learn early on. When I would write, I write really good sales letters, but if I write a really good sales letter for a business owner who's just starting, who doesn't have any traffic, that sales letter is not going to do very well. They're not sending traffic to it. They're not having a lot of people read it. So they're not going to get good results. And it's a waste of their money to pay my fees. Same thing with writing emails. If I'm writing emails for somebody and they have an email list of 200 people, it's not going to be worth what I charge. If they've got an email list of 2,000 people, it'll definitely be worth what I charge. So to avoid charging people something that's not really going to be worth their time or worth, again, this goes back to my love for capitalism. I don't want to sell something to somebody that it's not going to be the best for. So I've had to learn to be very picky about who I work for, both in their ethics, but on my own ethics. I don't want to be selling something to somebody that's not going to be leverageable for them because of the position that they're in.
Totally makes sense. Cool, man. Well, that was a great chat. Really interesting stuff with copywriting. I think we could go off on this for quite a while, but coming up on the hour. So yeah, thanks, Nathan, for coming on. Do you want to add anything before we sign off?
No. Oh yeah. You know what? Actually, I am. If you go to copyandfunnels.com/guide, I actually have a little PDF there. It teaches you what every advertisement should have. It teaches you if you're hiring a copywriter, it teaches you what to look out for to make sure that you're hiring a good copywriter rather than somebody who's a wet behind the ears copywriter. It'll also, if you're a business owner who's writing your own copy, it'll help you critique your own ads. It gives you 9 foundational elements that your ad should include so that you make sure that you're hitting everything. It also has like 4 or 5 of my kind of secret sauce copy editing techniques. We didn't even talk about editing, but editing is so important. There's words that you definitely don't want to use in your copy. There's phrases that you definitely want to avoid in your copy in order to make sure that it's just as smooth of a slide as possible for your reader so that you don't have any hiccups that kind of pull them out of the copy before they get to the sales message. So if you want that free PDF, it's guaranteed. I've even had like A-list copywriters that come to me and say, hey, you should be charging for this. This should be like a course in and of itself. So I give that away because it helps qualify my clients, people that take it and end up coming to me later. They're definitely more qualified than people that don't. So if you want to check that out and you want to improve the quality of your advertisements, go to copyandfunnels.com/guide. Download that PDF. You'll get on my email list. You'll start seeing masterfully written email marketing in your own inbox. And hopefully we can work together in the future.
Yeah, sounds awesome, man. That's I'll be there. I'll grab that thing, and I recommend everyone else do the same. And we'll have the links, all these links that you mentioned, we'll have them in the show notes for people that are listening. If you want to download that, you can just go to freedomlovin.com to find the links. So, yeah, Nathan, man, it's been a blast having you on. So thanks again, and all the best with what you're doing.
Kevin, thank you. It's been a blast, and I really appreciate the invite. All right, Free Market Squad, I hope you enjoyed that interview. Again, that was from Kevin Koskela's podcast. You can check it out over at freedomlovin.com. Definitely an awesome podcast. I recommend it. It gets two thumbs up from me, and I think you'll enjoy it as well. And I told you at the beginning of the show that I was going to be telling you at the end of the show about your chance to win a free course on how to use stories in your selling messages. So here's the deal. This is why stories are so powerful. Number one, when people hear a sales pitch, their defenses immediately go up. But when people hear a story, their defenses immediately go down. When they listen to a sales pitch, they're full of skepticism. Their brain is in the mode where it's looking for reasons to not believe what you're saying. It's looking for excuses to not buy. When someone realizes they're being pitched to, they get into a very analytical mindset, and they want to make sure that they're not being taken advantage of. The exact opposite is true when somebody starts hearing a story. When you start telling somebody a story, they hand you the steering wheel. They let you take control of wherever their thought process is going. It's just something that we naturally do when stories start. When a movie starts, we hand the steering wheel of our mind over to the producer and to the actors. When we sit down and read a book, we hand over the steering wheel of our mind to the author, and they're able to deliver us where they want us to go. And wouldn't that be great if you could do that with your sales messages? If you could take control of your reader's mind or your listener's mind and deliver them to a buy now option. That's what stories allow you to do. Here's the deal. Most people suck at storytelling. Most people don't know the elements of a story that keeps people hooked. Most people don't know the templates of a story that makes sense to people and help people have a smooth transition from beginning to end. Most people don't know what makes a good story and how to incorporate that story into a sales message. Being able to transition from a story into a pitch, being able to start at one destination and deliver their people to the desired destination of making a buying decision. Most people don't know how to do that. It's definitely a skill that you have to learn. And I teach that skill. Actually, me and Landon Porter, the sales gorilla over at salesgorilla.com, gorillamarketing.com, me and Landon put together a course on how to use stories to get sales, and it is available. Typically, I think I sell it for like $49 over at copyandfunnels.com. But I'm giving away maybe once a week, once a month, I'm going to be giving away free access to the course to one of the podcast listeners. How do you get free access to the course? You got to go over to iTunes, look up The Nathan Fraser Show, subscribe to the show on iTunes, rate and review the show maybe week, maybe every other week. We'll find out depending on the amount of feedback that I get from this. But I'm going to say very possibly every single week, I'm going to grab one of the newest reviews. I'm going to read it on air, and I'm going to give whoever left the review free access to the story selling course. So if you want to learn how to use stories in your sales messages to get more sales, to take control of, gosh, it sounds so shady when I say it that way, to take control of your prospect's mind and deliver them to a buying decision, you definitely need to get this course. If you want to get the course for free, head on over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, rate and review the podcast, and once a week or once every podcast episode, because you know that I don't release them every single week. But every single time that I release a new podcast episode, I'm going to be picking a winner and giving somebody, one of you lucky listeners, free access to the Story Selling course. All right, head on over to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review the podcast. My name's Nathan Frazier. I'm out of here. Deuces.